Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Brian Artis. This is the Dr. Artis Show, and I'm so excited and honored that you're spending some time with us today. All right. This is an incredible podcast show that we're excited to have put together for you. I'm going to actually do a PowerPoint presentation and walk you through that. This is the connection between obesity and depression, which along with depression comes anxiety, suicidal ideations and thoughts, you name it, and all that goes along with it. As there are exponentially rising concerns about levels of humanity getting bigger, more overweight, more obese, the looming threat of diabetes at unparalleled levels around the world, this is a much needed podcast. So if you know anybody struggling with depression, anxiety, suicidal behavior, or ideation, I'm about to walk you through medically proven research studies confirming that there are three specific vitamins, one vitamin all alone, which is now published to be a predictor. The amount of this vitamin in the blood of a depressed person, it is a predictive marker for suicidal actions and behaviors. The lower this one vitamin level is in the blood, the more suicide risks, the more suicide attempts an individual is going to have. So if you know anybody dealing with depression and obesity, the two are linked directly. We are going to be exploring the connection between obesity and depression, what the medical profession speaks on behalf of these topics, what they recommend for depression and obesity, and oh my goodness, if you thought you knew all of the concerns around drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy and Zepbound, which are called GLP-1 receptor agonists, wait till we show you today what is now a published warning confirmed by medical research of these drugs. You're going to be shocked. I had no idea. I knew it caused blindness. I knew it caused thyroid cancers and breast cancers. I knew it caused paralyzed stomachs and vomiting. I had no idea the psychological published impact of GLP-1 drugs until now. So we're going to show you that connection. So if you have anybody, a loved one dealing with obesity and depression and anxiety, suicide, if you know anybody on GLP-1 drugs, you might need to share this podcast with them. Anybody watching this and you're learning stuff that excites you, is warning to you, or inspirational to you, and you want to download the PowerPoint that I'm about to walk you through, you can go to the resources tab at the Dr. Artis Show and download this entire presentation. It is titled The Obesity and Depression Connection. So go download it for free. You have all this information. I show you all the research, and you now have it as a tool to make more powerful decisions in your life or in the life of your loved ones. All right, let's dive in. Let's get into it. All the Dr. Artis Show family members, you're familiar with this layout, so we're going to dive into everything you need to know about obesity and depression. I'm very excited to share this with you. All right, scan the QR code if you haven't, if you're new here and you haven't done it yet, scan the QR code, put in your email. We will now be able to notify you every time we come out with a new presentation here, wherever I'm speaking, a new book signing, whatever it is that we're doing. Any announcements we want to make sure you're aware of, you scan that QR code and put in your email. All right, this is CaliforniaHealthline.com. And this is an article that they published. Obesity and depression are intertwined, yet scientists don't know why. A 2011 paper by researchers from the University of Texas Southwestern found that patients' depressive symptoms were reduced when physicians gave them prescriptions for weekly exercise sessions. Okay, I found this very funny. A 2011 paper, University of Texas Southwestern, they're writing prescriptions to patients who are depressed to start working out, and they saw an improvement in their depressive symptoms. Just want you to know, there is a connection between obesity, depression, obviously working out to reduce obesity issues. In 2014, a study at Duke University found that simply helping obese women maintain their weight via small, not big, small lifestyle changes and monthly dietitian check-ins cut their rates of depression in half. Wow, that's amazing. Obesity already cost the medical system almost $150 billion per year. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation estimates that by 2030, in 4 years from now, obesity will sap the U.S. economy of an additional $390 billion to $520 billion in lost worker productivity. Notice, this isn't a disease, like a condition you would think of. This is obesity alone. depression makes the price tag worse. Its more severe variant, major depressive disorder, costs the country more than $200 billion per year. To set the stage for how big of a looming problem this is. All right, this is NCOA.org. How excess weight impacts our mental and emotional health. One study found that adults with excess weight had a 55% higher risk of developing depression over their lifetime, and that people with depression had a 58% increased risk of being obese. Now we're going to explore why, how obesity causes mental health problems. Number one, the quality of life. Men and women who carry significant extra weight often face problems related to physical and occupational functioning. Chronic pain on its own has been linked to depression also. Weight bias and discrimination is another way that obesity causes mental health problems. One of the biggest challenges for those struggling with weight issues is society's negative perspectives on obesity. So this would be self-shame and judgment, and then worrying about how other people perceive them, or actually perceive them. So if they're discriminated against, that obviously will create mental health challenges. It's going to make you depressed, sad, angry. A poor body image is another way obesity causes mental health issues. Weight bias and poor body image tend to go hand in hand. People who struggle with excess weight may also experience anxiety over being judged for how they look. Now, before I even go any further, I just want you to know there are people that are actually prescribed antidepressants when a medical doctor simply can't find out what's wrong with somebody. I cannot tell you how many patients I had come into my practices for years who had suffered with some pain in their body, including headaches and migraines. When a medical doctor couldn't find anything wrong with them physically, they would diagnose them as depressed and then give them an antidepressant as the solution, as if numbing the reality with a drug was the best option because we don't know what's wrong with you. So being in pain, being obese, obviously will make someone depressed, but that isn't what typically is causing the problem. But obesity is linked and depression is linked, vice versa to each. Physiological issues. Research suggests that excess body fat and poor eating habits increase inflammatory markers. This heightened inflammation can lead to a higher risk of developing depression and also plays a role in immune system health. I just mentioned this in the examples of headaches. These are caused by inflammation. Pain is caused by inflammation. If somebody's living in chronic pain, do you not think they're going to be depressed? It's obvious. Can mental health problems cause obesity too? While it's clear that excess weight can take a toll on someone's emotional well-being, it's also true that mental health conditions may influence a person's weight. Wait till you find out what the connection is here. Here it is. Chronic stress, anxiety, and depression, as well as mental health conditions like bipolarism, may cause someone to use food as a way to cope. They might also make poor dietary choices, which in turn can cause weight gain. How else can mental health problems cause obesity? The serotonin deficiency that is linked with depressed mood. Serotonin is your feel-good, happy, I'm safe hormone. When it's low, linked with depressed states, you have interrupted sleep patterns, and anxiety has been found to lead to carbohydrate cravings and weight gain. The lower the serotonin, the higher the carbohydrate intake. People who lack serotonin may self-medicate with food, they say. Adults who are depressed may lack the energy or desire to exercise or take part in other activities, leading to a sedentary lifestyle that can set the stage for weight problems. Studies over the years have revealed a complex interrelationship between obesity and mental health. Yeah, it's real complex, all right. I don't think anybody in life enjoys the inflammation, the pain, the limitations that come along with being overweight. Barriers to obesity treatment. Treatments themselves can pose obstacles. Many pharmacotherapies, drug therapies that can be effective in treating depression, so antidepressants and other mental health disorders. The drawback is that some of them, including certain antidepressants and mood stabilizers, can cause weight gain as a side effect. Well, here at the Dr. Artist Show, our members, our followers, it is not lost on them that we share mightily the undisclosed, typically, but very well published, but not well known side effects of all drugs that are FDA approved and prescribed by medical doctors. Did you know that antidepressants, of which obesity leads to depression, depression can cause obesity. If you're depressed and they put you on an antidepressant for any reason, did you know that most of those antidepressants and mood stabilizers cause weight gain? Which, do you think is going to make your emotional state better? Come on. On the flip side, for someone who is overweight, Traditional weight management therapy, such as following a nutritional plan or physical activity regimen, may be difficult for someone already struggling with low mood or anxiety. These are the barriers to some people who are obese. All right, this is the CDC. They have this document, Depression and Obesity in the United States, the Adult Household Population from 2005 to 2010. This is 15 years ago. It's much worse now. Here we go. Let's dive in. At that time, 15 years ago, it's worse now. 43% of adults with depression were obese. 43% of adults with depression were obese. Adults with depression were more likely to be obese. So if you're diagnosed depressed and you just look at depressed people, the majority of them are much more obese than those who are adults without depression. In every age group, though, no matter how the CDC spins the statistics, women with depression were more likely to be obese than women without depression. The proportion of adults with obesity rose as the severity of depression symptoms increased. The more depressed you were, the more obese you got. 55% of adults who were taking antidepressant drugs but still reported moderate to severe depressive symptoms were obese. Notice it. 55, that's over half of the people who are depressed on antidepressant drugs, but still tell the doctors and the CDC, even though I'm on antidepressants, I still have moderate to severe depression, were obese. Okay, I just want everybody to listen. 55% of adults on antidepressants reported they're still depressed mightily while on the drugs, were obese. So from this report, they give you some interesting graphics, so we'll show them to you. Adults with depression were more likely to be obese than adults without depression. So here's the figure. You'll see total men and women separated. The blue are the depressed numbers, and the green are the non-depressed. So on the left, you see these are adults with depression who are more likely to be obese. And the percentage to the left of the chart is the percent of those that are obese. And you'll notice that women, it's more than the men. This is what they wanted you to see. Now, this next figure is the percentage of adults who are older than 20 and over who were obese by sex and depression severity. So you will see different colors. Dark blue is a severe depression. Moderate depression, mild depression. Moderate is blue, purple. Mild is green. None is light green. So if you're not depressed, this is what you see. And they're looking at percentage to the left is those of who are obese. And you will see those with the most severe depression in blue, dark blue for men and women, much higher than those who were moderately depressed. But it's 50% of women, you'll see there. It's a lot. So this is there is a direct connection to depression and obesity. More than one half of adults with moderate to severe depression symptoms who were also taking antidepressant medication were obese. More than one half. Among adults who took antidepressant medications, of those who were moderate or severely depressed, 55% were obese, while 38% with mild depression were obese. So the more depressed, the more obese. Adults who took antidepressant medications were more likely to be obese than those not taking antidepressants. Both among adults with moderate to severe depression and adults with mild to no depression symptoms. And here's that chart. So you're going to see moderate to severe and then mild to no depression. And you will see the antidepressant group with the red arrow at the bottom. Those on antidepressant drugs were much more likely to be obese. The prescribed connection between obesity and depression. It's time to get into the pharmaco recommendations, the pharmaceutical drug recommendations for obesity. And lucky me, Healthline Magazine, an online reputable journal for medicine, just did this write-up in 2019. Everything you need to know about antidepressants that cause you to be fat. These are called, number one, they're going to dive into and do a review of tricyclic antidepressants. And you will see the first one named there in the box, Elavil, which a lot of people know. And you will see the generic names there, but Elavil will stick with. Tricyclic antidepressants, also known as cyclic antidepressants or TCAs, may cause weight gain. These drugs include, and there's their names. TCAs were some of the very first drugs approved to treat depression. Now they're going to dive in Healthline Magazine into the second most well-known weight-gaining causing drugs for depression. These are called monoamine oxidase inhibitors. They are usually called MAOIs for short. These were the first class of antidepressants to be developed. MAOIs that cause weight gain include these, Nardil, Marplan, and Parnate, and you will see their generic names there. Now, listen, for those of you that aren't familiar with these, doctors prescribe MAOIs most often when other antidepressants don't work due to certain side effects and safety concerns. So just so y'all know, I've already reviewed tricyclics. We're now at MAOIs. Then we're going to now the third category, which is the most prescribed antidepressants, most well-known, most well-marketed antidepressants in America and worldwide. And they are called serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Long-term use of certain selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, known as SSRIs, are the most commonly prescribed class of depression drugs. Long-term use, longer than 3 months, long-term use of the following SSRIs may cause weight gain. Let's look at their names. Paxil, Zoloft, Prozac, Celexa. Now, I want to pause here for a second. Do you guys recall that Oprah Winfrey came out of retirement from daytime television a year and a half ago and decided to take the stage for a several-hour Oprah Winfrey special, just promoting a weight loss drug called GLP-1 drugs, like Ozempic, Wegovy, and others? She must have been paid a lot to do that, to give back all of her stocks and Weight Watchers she had owned for years and get paid to come back on daytime television and do this episode. In that, the whole reason why I believe Oprah Winfrey was asked to be on that show is something she claims in the show is the reason for the show and come out of retirement to do this one daytime show. And it was to tell the world that science has now confirmed that obesity is a genetic disorder. I only bring that up because they want to drive home that you alone and your genetics are responsible for being fat and overweight. There's nothing you can do about it. If people are obese, they typically are more depressed. If they are depressed, they become more obese or are the higher percentage of them. So when you're prescribed an antidepressant, whether you're obese or just depressed, and you're put on an antidepressant, did you know that long-term use of these, which nobody's on short-term use of these, are all put on long-term use of these for these prescriptions of antidepressants. You're put on these, did you know they cause weight gain and obesity? Did you know Zoloft makes you fat? Prozac, Celexa, and Paxil, did you know that? That's not genetic. These cause people to be fat. Long-term use of SSRIs is mostly linked to weight gain. What? Oh my God, what? Now at the bottom, you'll see paroxetine. Paroxetine, look above in the little red box. I cut it out and put it right above. Paroxetine is the generic name of Paxil. There's another brand name from the same drug called Pixava. It's kind of like semaglutide, the Gila monster lizard venom, called Ozempic and Wegovy. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it Ozempic, Wegovy. You can call it semaglutide, the generic name. It doesn't matter. It's still Xcendin-4, which is the venom protein from the Gila monster. You just package it and call it whatever you want. Paxil, Pexiva, and Prisdel look like three different brand name drugs. They are not. They're all one drug called paroxetine. Is most commonly associated with weight gain with both long-term and short-term use. If you know anybody put on Paxil for depression or anxiety, just so you know, they know short-term use, long-term use of that drug causes you to get fat. Ask your doctor if obesity is right for you when they say you're depressed. Some atypical antidepressants, mirtazapine, Remeron, is a noradrenergic antagonist, which is a type of atypical antidepressant. The drug has been shown repeatedly to be more likely to cause weight gain and to increase appetite than other drugs. Mirtazapine is less likely to make people gain weight compared with TCAs, tricyclic drugs, the antidepressants, which I showed you was the first one of these four. Now let's dive into semaglutide. Semaglutide is a prescription medicine used for weight loss. If you look above, semaglutide is the generic name. Right below there, we highlight the brand names, Ozempic, Wegovy, Rybelsus. The drug class is GLP-1-RA, receptor agonist, you'll see there. That's Ozempic, that's what it looks like. I just happened to mention. This is the black box warning by the FDA for Ozempic, and Wegovy. And let's read it together. Warning, if you use Ozempic, which is a lifelong prescription, if you use this for 12 to 36 months, you're increasing the risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. In rodents, semaglutide caused thyroid C-cell tumors. Every commercial you're ever going to see, they're going to tell you, if you start seeing a lump in your throat, listen to the prescription drug medication commercials. If you notice a lump in your throat when you use Wegovy, Ozempic, call your doctor immediately. The lump in the throat is these thyroid cancer nodules. They just water it down for you in the commercial when they say, if you sense a lump in your throat, this isn't like tonsillitis. If you have a lump in your throat, you need to call your doctor right now. Yeah, because the drug causes cancer, thyroid cancer. Every form of medullary thyroid cancer within 12 to 36 months is the risk. It's an FDA black box warning. Here is a list of the serious side effects of semaglutide, known as Ozempic and Wegovy, for obesity. Okay. Unusual mood changes. Thoughts about hurting yourself is a serious side effect of Ozempic and Wegovy. GLP-1 drugs. All right. People that try to kill themselves, mood changes. Okay. This whole podcast is about the connection to obesity and depression. Now, they offer a drug for obesity called Ozempic, and Ozempic is known to cause people to have unusual mood changes as a serious side effect and thoughts about hurting yourself, suicide, injury, cutting yourself, mutilation. Ask your doctor if hurting yourself is right for you. More common side effects of Ozempic and Wegovy is anxiety, depression. Remember, there's a link to depression alone to obesity. Now they're going to give you a drug for obesity, and they're going to tell you it's known to cause commonly anxiety in people that take Ozempic and Wegovy, and it causes depression. No, thanks. Did you know that? Does anybody you know taking Ozempic and using it? Do they know that as they're losing weight, vomiting, puking because it's paralyzing their stomach, causing gastroparesis as their vision's going blurry from the venom of the drug? Have you noticed they're more depressed or anxious? Nightmares, slurred speech, that's a stroke, people. Or Bell's palsy, trouble breathing. These are side effects of Ozempic and Wegovy. Not sure that helps with depression and anxiety. Zepbound, another brand name. Zepbound, Majorna, these are GLP-1 receptor agonists, just like Ozempic and Wegovy, same thing. What is Zepbound? An FDA-approved medicine used for weight loss and weight management to help you lose weight and keep weight off. Well, that's what it looks like. It's a little injection every week. Risk of thyroid cancer is the black box warning for Zepbound. Ask your doctor if thyroid cancer is right for you because you're going to develop it. And that is not what the oncologists of the world tell me. Anybody that's gone on to any of these GLP-1 drugs in the last 3 years, it isn't thyroid cancer they're seeing, which is the FDA black box warning. That is not what they see within a year most often. People on Ozempic, Wegovy, those type of GLP-1 drugs, the number one cancer they see diagnosed most often within a year or two of starting that drug is breast cancer in males and females. Not the FDA warning thyroid cancer. That is not what they're seeing most often. Serious Zepbound side effects include suicidal behavior or thoughts. Thought that might be important for y'all to know. You might want to watch out for people. Zepbound has the potential to cause thyroid cancer. Did you see that? Read it aloud. Ask your doctor if cancer and suicide is right for you when they prescribe you an obesity drug. That's so popular on social media. Ozempic, Wegovy, Zepbound, Majorna. This is the FDA. There is an update on the FDA's website and an ongoing evaluation of reports of suicidal thoughts or actions in patients taking certain type of medicines approved for type 2 diabetes and obesity. Anybody want to guess what those drugs are? Oh, they're talking about GLP-1 receptor agonist. Oh, Zepbound, Majorna, Ozempic, Wegovy. Patients should not stop taking GLP-1 RAs, receptor agonist, without first consulting your healthcare professional, as stopping these medications may worsen your condition. Thanks. Okay, I'll just stop poisoning myself. But wait till my doctor tells me I can stop poisoning myself. Tell your healthcare professional if you experience new or worsening depression. This is from the FDA, everybody. Worsening depression on Ozempic and Wegovy, Majorna, Zepbound. Worsening suicidal thoughts or any unusual changes in mood or behavior, including violence. The current prescribing information for GLP-1 receptor agonist approved to treat patients with obesity or overweight contains information about the risks of suicidal thoughts and actions. I just showed you that. This information is also included in the labels of other types of weight loss medicines. Healthcare professionals should monitor for and advise patients using GLP-1 drugs to report new, okay, you're fat and overweight and you want a drug. They're going to give you one, and it's FDA approved. We're going to give you these shots called Ozempic, Wegovy, Majorna. They're telling the doctors that are prescribing it, the FDA is, you better advise your patients. I'm giving you Ozempic and Wegovy, Zepbound, Majorna. Report back to us new or worsening depression, suicidal thoughts, or any unusual changes in mood. I hope you guys are recognizing that it might be important that you pay attention to yourself or your loved ones who might be on these things, because it is very popular right now. And the FDA even knows this is a problem, and we're telling all the manufacturers to put it on the labels. And now they're telling the health professionals, you better be making sure your patients know you might want to start killing yourself on this drug called Ozempic, Wegovy, Majorna, and Zepbound. They might want to hurt themselves or others. Make sure they tell you. Scientific reports, the risk of depression, this is 2024. The risk of depression, anxiety, and suicidal behavior in patients with obesity on GLP-1 receptor agonist therapy. You guys have to pay attention to the stat. This is the most alarming research study I have seen in a long time since the Ebola trial with remdesivir. This is the most disgusting statistics I've seen in any research study since then. 53% of all people given the drug called remdesivir in human trials died. And that's more people than the infection kills on average that they were treating. And they still approved that to give it to people during COVID. Come on, man. All right. This large community-based study investigates the impact of GLP-1 receptor drugs, specifically semaglutide, which is Ozempic and Wegovy, on the risk of developing psychiatric conditions such as depression, anxiety, and suicidal behaviors in patients with obesity. Remember, people with obesity still struggle with depression more than most. Then you put them on a drug for depression, and it makes them worse, or obese, and then worse psychiatrically. From January 1st, 2015 to December 31st, 2023, this study included 162,000 people. This study showed a significant association between Ozempic, Wegovy, Majorna, and Zepbound treatment and a 98% increased risk of any psychiatric disorder. I repeat, this large 162,000 plus person study showed a significant association between people starting Ozempic, Wegovy, Zepbound, Majorna drugs called GLP-1 RA drugs and a 98% increased risk of any psychiatric disorders. 98%. Y'all do see that's only 2% off from 100%. You might as well just round it up. 100% of people on GLP-1 drugs increase risk of developing a psychiatric disorder. What's a psychiatric disorder? OCD, bipolarism, schizophrenia, depression, any. Notably, pay attention. These are the most disgusting stats I've seen in years. Notably, patients on Wegovy, Ozempic, Zepbound, Majorna, they saw a 195% risk increase of major depression and a 108% increase risk for anxiety and a 106% elevated risk for suicide behavior. Whoa. Hold on. Let's review these. Anybody in this large 160,000 plus person study of those taking these obesity drugs called GLP-1 RA drugs, Ozempic, Wegovy, Zepbound, Majorna, they saw a 98% increase of all psychiatric disorders. They saw a 195% increased risk of developing major depression, 108% increased risk for anxiety disorders, and a 106% elevated risk for suicide behavior. Holy crap. And the FDA approved this stuff to be safe. for consumption in America. Ask your doctor, ask your friends, ask your loved one, ask your mother, ask your aunt, ask your professor who's on Ozempic Wegovy if psychiatric conditions in 100% of you, major depression, anxiety, and suicide are right for you, because it's over 100% for all of them. 100%? Over. It's almost 200% for major depression disorder. Oh my God. Okay. Let's dive into now the natural ways to deal with obesity and depression, which of course I get the most excited about. All right. So what would I recommend? What would Dr. Artis say instead? All right. So let's stay away from these dangerous ass drugs that are published to cause such horrible side effects and suicidal links. Stuff gets exhausting sometimes. All right, but this is the good stuff. This is from the Neuropsychopharmacology Brain Drug Journal, 2017. And there's a substance called Googlesterone, which we have Google Resin Extract at our website. Googlesterone produces antidepressant-like effects in mice through the activation of what's called the BDNF signaling pathway. You don't need to know what BDNF, doesn't even matter. I'm about to show you that Googlesterones in mouse studies works as an antidepressant. And what's amazing about that is, and everybody out there might be thinking, for anybody new here, why is he talking about mice studies? Oh, because every drug company and every medical institution in the world knows you study drugs in mice before you give them to humans. And this is why. We study everything in mice first, and they publish this. Every mouse has the exact same number of genes that humans do. And they say this, I quote, we study drugs and chemicals in mice before we give them to humans because their genetics are so identical. We know, as scientists, if it happens in a mouse, it will happen in a human, end quote. So when I show you mouse studies at the Dr. Artis Show, every drug that is now in a pharmacy in America, CVS and Walgreens, was first ever tested in a mouse to see what it does to the mouse. And then it went from that trial in mice, it then went to humans. And then it went to the FDA. Then it went to being prescribed by your medical doctor. That's how it works. Mouse, man, FDA approval, your prescription pad by your medical doctor. And then you walk to CVS and Walgreens. But it all starts with a mouse. All right, so Googlesterone produces antidepressant-like effects in mice through this specific pathway. Well, let's dive in. Googlesterone was also investigated in the chronic, unpredictable stress model of depression with fluoxetine as the positive control. Does anybody know what fluoxetine is? Prozac. The tryptophan hydroxylase inhibitor and the tyrosine kinase B inhibitor were also used to explore the antidepressant-like mechanism of Googlesterone, which comes from a tree in the Middle East and India. Z-Googlesterone, which is just a form of Googlesterone hormone found inside of the sap of this tree, they gave 10 and 30 milligram doses. They gave Googlesterone at those doses to the mice for the chronic unpredictable stress-induced increase in the immobile time in the tail suspension test, is what they called the test. Googlesterone administration prevented the reductions in brain-derived neurotrophic factor protein expression levels, as well as the phosphorylation levels of CAMP, it's called CAMP, response element binding protein. Extracellular signaling regulating kinase 1.5 and protein kinase B in the hippocampus and cortex induced by chronic unpredictable stress. What does that mean? Googlesterone treatment also improved hippocampal neurogenesis, growth of brain cells, in chronic unpredictable stress-treated mice. Blockade of the brain-derived neurotrophic factor signal was what Googlesterone did. Collectively, our results showed that Googlesterone, because of those pathways I just quickly went through with you, exerts antidepressant-like effects through promoting the BDNF signaling pathway, providing a new insight into the pharmacological drug study role of Googlesterone, a plant extract, in the central nervous system, and shedding light on the development of new antidepressants from Googlesterones. They want to make drugs from this plant. They do it all the time, by the way. Now, here's the next study on Googlesterones, the appetite regulatory effect. Remember, this is an obesity and depression and obesity connection. So we're going to address both. This is the appetite regulation effect of Google steroids in rats, which is just a bigger mouse, a repertoire of plasma hormones and neurotransmitters. Google sterone, or Google lipid, is a steroidal constituent, a nutrient, present in the neutral fraction, small part, of gum resin of Camphora muckle tree, commonly known as Google. In this study, we've investigated the dose-dependent 100, 200, 400 milligram per kilogram of body weight effect of Google steroids, so three different doses, amounts of Google steroids, on appetite-regulating hormones called ghrelin, G-H-R-E-L-I-N. This tells you when you're full. You're not hungry anymore. Appetite-suppressant hormone. Leptin, cholecystokine, and neurotransmitters called serotonin and dopamine, which play a major role in the energy homeostasis and thus influence obesity-related factors. We've also studied its effect on food intake, body weight, and plasma triglycerides and blood sugar in rats. Google steroids at the dose, the highest dose of the three they tested above, 400 milligrams, was able to significantly reduce food intake and limit body weight gain over a period of 15 days. It also significantly, not smallly, significantly decreased the plasma ghrelin. It decreases this hunger hormone, which is amazing. It also reduced glucose, triglyceride levels, and it increased plasma leptin, which blocks your want to eat, serotonin, dopamine levels, but did not show much effect on the CCK levels. So Google steroid has an impact to help reverse depression. It also helps hunger regulation and lose weight even in 15 days at 400 milligrams a day per kilogram. Now we're going to go to vitamin K. Vitamin K induced effects on body fat and weight results from a three-year vitamin K2 intervention study. This is a three-year study on women. Vitamin K status has been linked to fat. Vitamin K status being how much vitamin K is in the blood of a patient. Vitamin K status has been linked to fat and blood sugar metabolism by several authors. Here we tested the hypothesis that increasing vitamin K intake by mouth decreases body fat or fat distribution. In a randomized placebo-controlled human intervention trial, 214 postmenopausal women, 55 to 65 years of age, received either 180 micrograms a day of vitamin K2 in the form of minoquinone 7 or MK-7, which is the type of vitamin K we carry, or a placebo for 3 years. This is the exact vitamin K we have in our vitamin D3 K2 supplement. The exact one, minoquinone 7, or a placebo for 3 years. They did this. MK-7, this is vitamin K treatment, resulted in a significant increase in total and human molecular weight adiponectin, what breaks down fat cells, and a decrease in abdominal fat mass. So belly fat significantly reduced. And in the estimated visceral adipose tissue, this is fat around your organs in your abdomen, was reduced as compared with the placebo group. High vitamin K2 intake, says medical science, may support reducing body weight, abdominal and visceral fat, and notably in subjects showing a strong increase in COC. What you can see above is uncarboxylated OC. You can see it above in the actual paragraph. That's vitamin K. And I'm not done with vitamin K. We're about to go back to it. Don't worry. You got to see this about vitamin K. In fact, you're going to be shocked what you're about to learn about vitamin K. I did not know this. It's spectacular. Effective vitamin D supplementation on weight loss. So we talked about vitamin K. We have a vitamin D3 K2 supplement. Effective vitamin D supplementation on weight loss, blood sugar indices, and lipid profile. That's cholesterol. Fats in obese and overweight women, a clinical trial study. The World Health Organization has declared that obesity is an epidemic of the 21st century. Previous studies have shown that obesity may increase the risk of vitamin D deficiency. Furthermore, other studies have demonstrated that vitamin D insufficiency, not having enough vitamin D, was accompanied with a higher risk of type 2 diabetes, heart diseases, high blood pressure, and obesity. The lower a person's vitamin D levels, the higher their risk for obesity and all the other problems you just read. But we're talking about obesity and depression here today. This double-blind clinical trial was done in 50 overweight and obese women who were divided into two groups, in which one group received vitamin D supplements and the other group received placebo. Intervention group received vitamin D with doses of 50,000 international units for 6 weeks. 50,000 international units. I usually recommend 5,000 international units, up to 10. One dose of ours is 5,000. Intervention group. The treated group received up to 50,000 international units per week. So my recommended dose of 5,000, that would be 5,000 times 10 days. That's 50,000. That's not a week, but a little bit longer than a week. After using vitamin D supplementation for 6 weeks only, WT, which stands for weight, WC, which stands for waist circumference, and body mass index were decreased significantly. Their weight went down, their waist size went down, their body mass index, BMI, went down significantly, and their blood levels of vitamin D significantly went up as compared to the control group who didn't get it. After 6 weeks of intervention, the average weight, WT, BMI, WC, which is waist circumference, and HC, which I'm not going to tell you what that is, I'm going to show you here in a second, decreased significantly. Previous studies have shown that vitamin D deficiency was more prevalent in obese people, and there was an inverse association between vitamin D with BMI and waist circumference. So the lower vitamin D, we've already seen this published in medical research that these authors are telling you. We've already seen it. The lower your vitamin D level is in your blood, the higher your weight, the higher your BMI, which includes weight, and higher your waist circumference is, the bigger your waist is. Ladies, men. Now, I told you I was going to show you what HC stands for. After 6 weeks of taking vitamin D at 50,000 international units a week only. So if you're wondering how to do that with mine, our supplement, vitamin D3K2, you're going to take vitamin D3, which has 5,000 international units per dose. You're going to take that, and you're going to take at least 10 doses a week. That's it. To get to 50,000 international units. All right, so after 6 weeks of doing 50,000 units of vitamin D, the average of weight, BMI, WC, and HC decreased significantly. What is HC? Well, if you look up here, these are all the abbreviations for the study. You look above, right above that little red arch, you will see hip circumference, how wide your hips are, decreased significantly. Well, look at that. WC is waist circumference. Waist circumference went down. Anybody out there, would you like to see your waist come down just an inch? Anybody out there would like to see their hip circumference come down just a little bit and fit into that, I don't know, class reunion dress you want to wear? I don't know, whatever it is. Or outfit. Got anything you don't fit in your closet anymore? You want to see if you can improve that? Look, 6 weeks, 50,000 international units of vitamin D alone. It's proven to do that already in randomized clinical trials. Here we go. This is the one I want all of y'all to see about vitamin K. Everybody, please pay attention. Vitamin K2 protects mice against non-alcoholic fatty liver disease induced by high-fat diet. Scientific reports in this study, three different doses. All right, this might not be the one about vitamin K, but I'm getting there. In this study, three different doses of vitamin K prophylactic interventions were effective in delaying body weight and abdominal circumference gain in mice. Remember, if it happens in a mouse, it's going to happen in a human. You're now learning. We have one supplement at the Dr. Artist Show called vitamin D3 and K2 and organic MCT oil. These doses have been proven in human trials to, within 6 weeks, improve abdominal circumference gain, delay body weight gain, reduce waist circumference, hip circumference, you name it. Dam is a researcher, conducted a 10-year follow-up study of 802 adults and found that those with high vitamin K2 intake had a lower waist circumference and a lower incidence of metabolic syndrome. What is metabolic syndrome? It is a combination of three issues: high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and you've got a fat waistline. That's what metabolic syndrome is. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, and a big waist. In addition, it has been reported that human blood levels of vitamin K is inversely correlated with body mass index. If you're trying to improve your BMI and it's higher than you like, you got to put vitamin K in. The more vitamin K you put in the body, the better your BMI becomes. The more vitamin K in the body, the lower your BMI goes. That's the inverse relationship. We found that mice given vitamin K2 showed significant differences in body fat content and body fat percentage. Vitamin K2 significantly inhibited the increase of body fat and body fat percentage in mice fed high-fat diets, and 0.2 milligrams intervention had the best effect. Notably, vitamin K2 regulates fat metabolism in the body without affecting the consumption or distribution of other components in the body, such as lean body mass and free body fluid. So less edema, less weight. Our results showed that NAFLD mice, those fed a specific diet, were larger and significantly obese, whereas the body size of the mice was well controlled if they just got vitamin K2 intervention supplemented. In addition, we found that prophylactic administration of vitamin K2, giving them vitamin K2 before the diet even started, not only reduced their gross liver fat degeneration, but also effectively reduced visceral fat accumulation. Visceral fat is the fat in the abdomen. You saw lower fat reserves. Vitamin K2 has a significant protective effect on high-fat diet-induced NAFLD in mice. Vitamin K2 significantly reduced the fat content of high-fat diet-induced NAFLD mice without affecting the distribution of other body components. Now, this is the one I wanted to talk about. I thought it was the other one. It's not. I knew it right when I got to the meat of the research study. Everybody on Earth, please, if you love anybody, if you have reverence for humanity, respect for other lives, and you believe there are people that are super depressed, suicidal, struggling with suicidal thoughts, behaviors, actions, violence, mood changes, please pay attention to the study, for the love of God and all men and women and children, teenagers. At the Healing for the Ages conference in 2022, we had a teenagers presentation by the teenagers of all the docs. And what they presented in 2024 was an alarming disclosure in 2024 that the highest percentage of an age group, the highest growing number of individuals that are now contemplating suicide or taking action to kill themselves in 2024, and it's still accurate today in 2026, the highest exponentially growing risk factor of individuals by age who are taking actions to kill themselves or wanting to kill themselves is the ages of 4 to 11 years old in America. 4-year-old children to 11. And they walked the audiences through the research. So please, if you know anybody struggling, wanting to live, or mightily depressed, they have got to know about this article. Okay, vitamin K2 improves anxiety and depression, but not cognition, not the way the brain works, like to calculate and remember and recall, but improves anxiety and depression. In rats with metabolic syndrome, a roll of blood glucose. Male rats were divided into 4 groups. A control group on a regular rat chow food, a metabolic syndrome group, which I just highlighted what that means, a high-fat, high-fructose diet, and a control group treated with vitamin K2, and an MS group treated with vitamin K2, MS being metabolic syndrome. The rats from the metabolic syndrome group had elevated blood sugar. They had anxiety, depression, and memory deficit. Vitamin K2 normalized their blood sugar and reduced anxiety and depression, but did not improve memory. It might be that the anxiolytic anxiety-reducing effect of vitamin K2 in this setting is at least partly due to its effect on blood sugar, while the antidepressant effect is blood sugar independent. So they're just saying, because it had such a dramatic impact on blood sugar, maybe if other researchers do the work, maybe they'll find there's a direct correlation between anxiety levels and glucose, because if the impact is improving glucose, then maybe that's how it's working to have an antidepressant effect. The present study demonstrated that vitamin K2 prevented the development of anxiety and depression. This is where you got to pay attention. There is an association between vitamin K and suicide attempts in patients with depression. And this is a controlled case study, a case control study. This was a retrospective cross-sectional study involving 146 cases with a history of suicidal attempts and 149 subjects without a lifetime history of suicidal attempts. The levels of thyroid hormones, their lipid profile, which are fats, cholesterol included, inflammatory cytokines, and vitamins in their blood were measured. Subjects who had suicidal attempts presented with a significant decrease in FT4, thyroid hormone, TC, total cholesterol, vitamin D, and vitamin K, but saw increases in their CRP levels, C-reactive protein levels. In these variables, vitamin K has a better diagnostic value for suicide attempts in depressed patients. Of all the things they measured, measuring the vitamin K level in the blood is the most diagnostic value for determining the amount of suicide attempts in a person. Are you listening to me? With a sensitivity of 0.842 and a specificity of 0.715, which is only really important to researchers who understand these statistics. Correlation analysis suggested that vitamin K was significantly and positively related to follicular thyroid 4 hormone, sorry, FT4 hormone, which is your thyroid hormone, T4. You got total cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, and LDL. Multivariate analysis, this is important. Multiple studies of researchers show that blood levels of vitamin K predicts suicide attempts in depressed patients. Our study suggests that low vitamin K levels were correlated with suicide attempts in patients with depression, indicating that vitamin K deficiency might be a biological risk factor for depression. Hold on. I repeat. I've cut away everything but what you need to look at. I want to repeat. I'm Dr. Brian Artis. I repeat, blood levels of vitamin K predicts suicidal attempts in depressed patients. I repeat, low vitamin K levels were correlated with suicidal attempts in patients with depression, indicating that vitamin K deficiency might be a biological risk factor for depression. Anybody out there know any psychotherapist, behavioral analyst, psychologist, psychiatrist who are seeing people battling depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts? Do any of them know the vitamin K connection? Read the first statement on the screen from medical researchers. Serum, meaning blood, vitamin K level predicts suicidal attempts in depression patients. I repeat, blood levels of vitamin K predicts suicidal attempts in depression patients. If you take a blood sample of a patient who is depressed, the level of vitamin K will tell you how many times they will try to kill themselves. The lower the vitamin K level, the more times they'll try to kill themselves. Are you listening to me? Low vitamin K levels were correlated with suicide attempts in patients with depression. If you love anybody struggling with suicidal thoughts, ideations, or depressed, or seeing a psychologist or on antidepressants and being described one at all, you should be telling them about vitamin K. This is the Journal of Affective Disorders. Affect is how your face reacts to stuff. If there's no emotional expression, they call it no affect. Journal of Affective Disorders, the effect of vitamin D supplementation on primary depression. This is a multi-analysis of research studies. 18 studies met the criteria in this retrieve citations of review studies. The meta-analysis showed that vitamin D supplementation had a significant effect on overall reduction in depression symptoms. Subgroup analysis showed, so when they went even further into those studies, showed that vitamin D supplementation significantly reduced depression symptoms scores in patients with blood levels of vitamin D higher than 50 nanomoles, which is the bare minimum, I believe, that you should ever have. Vitamin D supplementation, the conclusion of this study, vitamin D supplementation has a benefit on improving depressive symptoms in adults with primary depression and vitamin D levels that are higher than 50 nanomoles. Relatively high levels of vitamin D may be required for alleviating depression. Wow. Increased vitamin D intake can decrease symptoms of depression and anxiety. This is from pharmacytimes.com. Increased vitamin D, that's not even a drug. Vitamin D intake can decrease symptoms of depression and anxiety, which is what we're talking about. Low levels of vitamin D were passed on to the offspring of mothers who were exposed to low levels of vitamin D from pre-pregnancy. Okay, so they took people who were pregnant, and while pregnant, weren't consuming vitamin D and had low level of vitamin D. And then they had kids, and those kids, they're telling you, had low levels of vitamin D too. Further, the low levels of vitamin D were determined to cause anhedonia. Y'all know what that is? You should look it up. It's where there's no joy, no fun, no affect. They're expressionless. There's no joy, no fulfillment in life whatsoever. These are people that just sit around. Yeah, there's nothing. Nothing's good going on. Life is just blah. Like 24/7. That's what this is. which is a significant marker of depression in offspring. Administration of vitamin D3 for 7 days only effectively prevents depression-like behavior caused by corticosteroid exposure, inhalers, prednisone, and brain oxidative stress markers. And this antidepressant effect of vitamin D is potentially caused by oxidative stress modulation. Vitamin D balances out stress in the human body. Now we're going to dive into another vitamin. It's called vitamin B9. It has another term called folate. So we've talked about glucosterones from a tree, its impact on weight, obesity, and hunger, and elevating the mood. We've now dove into vitamin K and vitamin D and its impact on weight and depression, and it's linked to suicidal behavior, both of them. Any vitamin D levels that are low and K levels that are low, you see higher rates of suicide, higher rates of depression and obesity for both. So vitamin K, vitamin D, and glucosterones. Now we're at vitamin B9, one singular B9 vitamin. Low B9 or folate intake and blood levels of B9 are associated with higher body mass index, being fatter and overweight, and abdominal fat accumulation. Well, if you don't want belly fat, you need to be taking more B9. In this study, we showed that low levels of vitamin B9 concentrations and low folate intakes, not supplementing B9, are associated with greater BMI, higher body fat accumulation, and greater waist circumference, independent of their overall diet quality. It didn't matter if they ate all vegan. It didn't matter if they ate all McDonald's meals every day, just ate Pop-Tarts and Krispy Kreme donuts. It didn't matter. If we gave them vitamin B9 supplements and they took it, their waist circumferences were lower, their weight was lower, you name it. Their body fat accumulation was lower. Altogether, our findings support that the hypothesis that higher folate intake, higher amounts of vitamin B9 could be a protective factor against obesity. Only a few studies have shown that folate blood levels is lower in people with obesity and overweight. So they've seen this in just a few studies, actually, who have paid to look. Is there a connection to B9 levels and obesity? And the few studies that have done it have found there's a correlation. And it's independent of folate intake. It's just how much is in their blood. How much does their body hold on to? The association observed in the study could be explained in two ways. Firstly, low blood levels of folate may be an outcome of obesity. They're saying maybe fat people just have low levels of vitamin B9. Secondly, the second observation might be that low blood levels of folate may be causing obesity through altered patterns other than epigenetic modifications involved. For instance, in lipid metabolism and fat metabolism, our finding that subjects with BMIs higher than 25 had lower levels of vitamin B9 independent of intake, taking supplements of vitamin B9. The hypothesis of the researcher De Silva that obesity may be an independent factor that alters folate redistribution by increasing the cellular uptake of dietary folate. So maybe, as De Silva said, maybe they're just fat and their fat cells, because they have more of them, are taking up more B9. And maybe that's why there's less in their blood work. But what these people discovered was this suggests that low folate status may cause only abdominal fat accumulation. Okay, well, how many people in America have fat accumulation in their belly? Most of them. These results are in line with the findings of Bird, another researcher, and of Thalalik, another researcher. The mechanism linking folate deficiency, vitamin B9, low intake, low in the blood, and abdominal fat accumulation could include systemic oxidative stress, blood sugar metabolism, and DNA methylation, which is a process in the liver. The study of Piathalik showed that women with low blood levels of vitamin B9 had lower peripheral blood mononuclear cells, L1 methylation, which was related to higher waist circumference, so larger waist, higher BMI, and more body fat percentage, the lower their B9 level was in the blood. And these researchers were able to demonstrate that low levels of vitamin B taken supplemented wise or dietary wise, and the blood levels of vitamin B9 are weakly but independently associated with a greater body weight and central body weight in the abdomen in healthy adults aged 20 to 40 years old. Here's another study. Now that was for weight and folate. Now we're going to go to folate, vitamin B9, and its impact on depression. Has that been studied? And there it is. This is the Journal of Psychiatric Research. There's an association between vitamin B9 called folate and depression. The present study found that individuals with depression have significantly lower levels of vitamin B9 than individuals without depression. we found that dietary intake of folate and serum levels of folate significantly differentiated individuals with versus without depression. Those with depression had lower levels of vitamin B9 in their blood. All populations, including geriatric, adult, perinatal, child, and adolescent, had significantly lower levels of folate than in their non-depressed counterparts for all those age groups. It didn't matter if you were young or old. It didn't matter. Every age group, all populations, had significantly lower levels of folate than their non-depressed same age groups. This is Nutrients Medical Journal. Folate and its significance, that's vitamin B9, in depressive disorders and suicide. These findings indicate that folate deficiency is linked to an elevated risk of developing depression, as well as a more severe depressive symptoms, longer episodes of depression, and an increased likelihood of depressive symptoms relapse. L-methylfolate, which is the form of vitamin B9 in our Hydrate Complete product at Nature Wins, it's the only form of vitamin B9 in our multivitamin gummies for adults and in our chewable multivitamin for kids. It's the only B9 we choose. Methylfolate is the active form of vitamin B9. It's the only form able to cross the blood-brain barrier. Research has demonstrated that individuals with folate deficiency may exhibit an inadequate response to antidepressant medications. If someone is put on antidepressant drugs that we showed you earlier today, if we put you on Paxil, if we put you on Prozac, Zoloft, Celexa, you name it, if we put you on that and you have low levels of B9 in your blood, you do not respond to the antidepressant drugs as well, which can contribute to the characterization of their condition as treatment-resistant depression. So if the medical doctor writes a prescription for you, you get worse, you become more suicidal, the antidepressant drug doesn't work for you or your loved one, and your medical doctor never looked at your B9 levels, the B9 levels have already been confirmed in medical research studies that the level of B9 in the blood directly impacts how well a patient reacts to antidepressant prescriptions. But if you only give them an antidepressant prescription, don't look at the blood, the medical profession will actually label the individual as treatment resistant. Both folic acid, which is folate, vitamin B9, and L-methylfolate, the form of B9 they're looking at here, have demonstrated efficacy in individuals with depression. In a randomized clinical trial conducted by Reynolds and his team, a singular therapy with methylfolate showed comparable effectiveness to a standard antidepressant in the treatment of mild to moderate depression. Did you catch that? Are you paying attention? I hope you're not driving your car, riding your bike, taking a jog right now, and you're just zoning out with my voice and the harmonics of my voice. These researchers confirmed already a randomized clinical trial, which is what you're supposed to respect and revere and honor medically as sound science. This researcher, Reynolds, gave depressed people who were mild to moderately depressed diagnosed, gave half of them vitamin B9 only and gave the others a prescription drug for antidepressant. And vitamin B9 did better. It was comparably effective. So it had the same outcome as the drug without the side effects. The study included 19 patients treated with folate, methylfolate, vitamin B9, and 20 patients treated with amitriptyline, which is called Elavil, the brand name, for a duration of 6 weeks. The response rates, check this out, they say it was comparable. It wasn't. Watch this. Watch. Pay attention. The response rates to either vitamin B9 therapy or the prescription drug Elavil, the response rates were 42% improvement for vitamin B9 called methylfolate, and they saw a 35% increased response rate to the prescription FDA-approved drug called amitriptyline, otherwise known as Elavil. Okay, look at those rates, people. Vitamin B9 by itself for depressed patients, they saw an improvement in all depressed symptoms in 42% of all people given just vitamin B9, and that compared to the prescription drug called an antidepressant that makes billions of dollars a year for Big Pharma and the FDA, it only had a 35% improvement in those patients that took it for 6 weeks. So I'd like to ask you at home, which one would you prefer if you're depressed? Would you rather something that had a 35% success rate or 42% success rate with no side effects. That would be vitamin B9. Check it out. I'm not even making it up. What's the next statement? Notably, no side effects were reported with methylfolate. Hold on. For those of you going, I think I'd rather have the FDA approved 35% response rate of amitriptyline. While three patients had to withdraw, remember there's only 20 patients in this group, three of them had to withdraw from the study due to unacceptable side effects from amitriptyline. Well, 3 out of 20 is a lot. It's like 1 in 7. But there were zero side effects listed in anybody taking methylfolate. 24 patients diagnosed with depression disorder and exhibiting red blood cell folate deficiency were enrolled in this study, this separate study. The patients received 15 milligrams per day of vitamin B9 as an addition to their ongoing antidepressant treatment. The trial lasted for a period from 3 to 6 months. Patients who received vitamin B9 as an additional therapy experienced significantly greater improvements compared to those who were given a placebo. I don't know how to drive this home anymore. If you're depressed, vitamin K, vitamin D, vitamin B9, y'all need to be on. Individuals who are at risk of future suicide have been found to have low levels of vitamin B9 in both their blood and in their red blood cells. In a recent study conducted in South Korea, a significant association was discovered between blood levels of vitamin B9 and both fatal and non-fatal suicide attempts during the follow-up period. The study reported an area under the curve value of 0.77, indicating a moderate predictive ability. So now you've seen two medical research groups who have had peer review of other peers who do similar research, confirming their findings are accurate. Your claims are on point. Vitamin K levels in the blood is a predictor of the number of suicide attempts in a person. The lower the vitamin K, the higher amounts of suicide attempts they're going to actually do. That is proven in research. This research study on vitamin B9 is saying, again, this study is indicating a moderate predictive ability for suicide attempts with vitamin B9 levels, folate, in their blood or red blood cells of people who are depressed. This is Google resin at the Dr. Artist Show, with the Google sterones as the primary ingredient inside the capsules. Anybody with depression, anxiety, suicidal behavior, overweight, obesity, you should be taking at least 2 capsules of these every day. The preventative dose is 1 a day. If you just want to stay healthy and have healthy cholesterol levels, healthy heart, healthy mind, just 1 a day. But if you're trying to treat something, I would recommend 2 a day, every day, forever. Or until you reach your goal, weight, circumference, waist circumference, you name it, and then go down to 1 a day and keep it there. This is vitamin D3K2. You see there the levels. It's 5,000 international units of vitamin D in a dose. Vitamin K2 at 50 micrograms. Exactly what you saw inside of the research study. An organic MCT oil. Now, the vitamin B9 folate, for those of you who are very familiar with my site and our products, we do not have a vitamin B9 alone, standalone product. It is a primary product in our new Hydrate Complete. You'll see the list here. I have a red box around all the ingredients that are B vitamins, but I'm going to highlight one, vitamin B9. And you'll see its name, its form is methylfolate, which you saw in the research studies is the only one that crosses the blood-brain barrier. And so we want to make sure you have the highest quality ingredients in your products. You have the vitamins at the right dose that create efficacy and change. I drink 2 packets of this every single day. I will be very soon doing a presentation. People think this is just for athletes. I created it just because of the impact of the loss of these minerals all in this product are to replace what you lose in every drop of sweat. But what you don't know is most of the 8 most common blood tests that your medical doctor will ever order on you, and every single marker on those blood tests, you know what the majority of them are published by medicine to be out of normal range because of. So it doesn't matter if it's red blood cells, bilirubin, it doesn't matter if it's BUN, it doesn't matter. Whatever the marker is on a blood test, the majority of them are published by medical science to be out of normal range, either high or low, due to dehydration, which is exactly what this is for, to replace minerals, vitamins, and amino acids that cause that are caused to be reduced due to causes of dehydration, which is either not getting these supplements in your diet, it's through diarrhea episodes, urinary tract infections, too much sweat loss, you name it. Drugs that cause, diuretic drugs are probably one of the number one causes of dehydration. Dehydration is such a big problem. That is why every person in America put in an ambulance for a sickness or illness or emergency or in a hospital room is on a bag of salt water, salt and chloride. Those are electrolytes. Those are just two of the minerals inside of our hydrate that they know everybody in America and around the world is deficient in. They know dehydration, which is a reduction in just not just water, water and minerals, vitamins, and amino acids. They at least give you the two that you lose most often. Well, you lose 11 minerals in every drop of sweat. Hydrate Complete's the only hydrate formula that puts them all back in. All of them. It's the only one in the whole world. And vitamin B9 happens to be one of the 11 vitamins also we made sure was included that you also lose in every drop of sweat and is lost in all diarrhea episodes and from every drug that causes dehydration. And there are many, many, many of these. Scan the QR code if you'd like to be notified of our next one. I hope you found the connection to obesity and depression. I hope you found this enlightening and inspiring. I did. I learned a lot just doing the study and doing the research and reviewing the research. This is our book, Scan the Code. If you don't have it, make sure you get the book, the Amazon bestseller book for over a year now, Moving Beyond the COVID-19 Lies, Restoring Health and Hope for Humanity. You can get that at our website. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it on Audible. It's now in Spanish, French, and we're coming out very soon with a Polish version. All right, everybody. I am Dr. Brian Artis. That is all I have for you today. This is The Connection to Obesity and Depression. I'm Dr. Artis. God bless you. We love you, and we'll see you next time on The Dr. Artis Show. Thanks for watching this week's episode. Visit thedrartisshow.com/follow for my official social media channels and free healing resources. Beware of fraud accounts. Neither I nor my company will ever ask you for money, crypto, or personal information through your social media or DMs. Like this video and share with a friend. And if you're not already, subscribe and follow along so you don't miss any updates from me, the only real Dr. Brian Artis. And remember, nature always wins.